The following is the Srimad Bhagavatam class, second canto, fourth chapter, text number 13, given by Srila Ravinda Swarup Das on April 26, 1992, in
Potomac. A reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 2, chapter 4, called The Process of Creation, this morning's text number 13. I again offer my respectful obeisances unto the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses and the destroyer of the further advances in atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, he grants their specific destinations. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lord Sri Krishna is the complete form of all existence, both material and spiritual. Akila means complete, or that which is not kila, inferior. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there are two kinds of nature, prakriti, namely the material nature and the spiritual nature, or the external and internal potencies of the Lord. The material nature is called apara, or inferior, and the spiritual nature is called superior, or transcendental. Therefore, the form of the Lord is not of the inferior material nature. He is complete transcendence, and he is murti, or having transcendental form. The less intelligent men who are unaware of his transcendental form describe him as impersonal Brahman. But Brahman is simply the rays of his transcendental body, yasya prabha. And the devotees who are aware of his transcendental form render him service, and therefore the Lord also reciprocates by his causeless mercy, and thus delivers his devotees from all distresses. The pious men who follow the rulings of the Vedas are also dear to him, and therefore the pious men of this world are also protected by him. The impious and the non-devotees are against the principles of the Vedas, and so such persons are always hampered from making advances in their nefarious activities. Some of them who are specially favored by the Lord are killed by him personally, as in the case of Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, and Kamsa, and thus such demons get salvation and are therefore checked from further progress in their demoniac activities. Just like a kind father, either in his favor upon the devotees or his punishment of the demons, he is ever kind to everyone because he is the complete existence for all individual existences, for all individual existence. The Paramahamsa stage of existence is the highest perfectional stage of spiritual values. According to Srimati Kunti Devi, the Lord is factually understood by the Paramahamsas only, as there is gradual realization of the transcendence from impersonal Brahman to localized Paramatma to the personality of Godhead Purushottama, Lord Krishna. Similarly, there is gradual promotion of one's situation in the spiritual life of sannyas. Kuticha, Bahuddha, Parivrajakacharya, and Paramahamsa are gradual, progressive stages in the renounced order of life, sannyas, and Queen Kunti Devi, the mother of the Pandavas, has spoken about them in her prayers for Lord Krishna, Canto 1, Chapter 8. The Paramahamsas are generally found among both the impersonalists and the devotees, but according to Srimad Bhagavatam, clearly stated by Kunti Devi, Pure bhakti yoga is understood by the Paramahamsas, and Kunti Devi has especially mentioned that the Lord descends Paritranaya Sadhunam specially toward bhakti yoga to the Paramahamsas. So ultimately the Paramahamsas, in the true sense of the term, are unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has directly accepted that the highest destination is bhakti yoga, by which one accepts the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Those who accept the path of bhakti yoga are the factual Paramahamsas. Since the Lord is very kind to everyone, the impersonalists who accept bhakti as the means of merging in the existence of the Lord and His impersonal Brahma Jyoti are also awarded their desired destination. He has assured everyone in the Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Ye yata mam prapadyante. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, there are two classes of Paramahamsas, namely the Brahmanandis, impersonalists, and the Premanandis, devotees. And both are awarded their desired destinations, although the Premanandis are more fortunate than the Brahmanandis. But both the Brahmanandis and the Premanandis are transcendentalists, and they have nothing to do with the inferior material nature full of the existential miseries of life. Bhuyo namasad vijana chide satam sambhavaya kila sattamurtaye pumsam puna paramahamsa asrame evastitanam anumrigya dasuse. I again offer my respectful obeisances unto the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses, and the destroyer of further advances and atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. The transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, He grants their specific destinations. So we hear in this verse, and even more so in the purport, all different kinds of people are mentioned. So let's try to sort them out here. Prabhupada uses this word, transcendentalists. What is a transcendentalist? Because he says both impersonalists and personalists are transcendentalists. And they are discussed here as also different from another group, pious men who follow the rulings of the Vedas. It says early in the purport, pious men who follow the rulings of the Vedas are also dear to Him. Therefore the pious men of this world are also protected by Him. So there's one class, and then in the pious class, that's contrasted with the impious, or the demons. So you get different groups of people that are mentioned here. And the point is that all of them are reciprocated with in a different way by Krishna. Right. So let's start with the biggest division here, the pious and the impious. What makes a person pious? It says here, they follow the rulings of the Vedas. We have a list of pious means astikya, huh? Asti. As mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, I think is astikyam, one of the qualifications of brahmana. I forgot how it's translated in the translation there, as being religious, I think. No? But it really comes from the Sanskrit word asti, which means it is. It means that a person who is astikyam is one who affirms the existence of the Vedas. He accepts the authority of the Vedas. Those who are nastika, naasti, those are impious people. They reject or don't follow the authority of the Vedas. So that's the dividing line. Those who are pious, those who are within Vedic culture, they accept the authority of the Vedic literature. So they are also protected by Krishna. There may be not transcendentalists, may be pious without being a transcendentalist. Because here, the transcendentalists are those whose aspirations lead them to become free from material existence. To transcend means, literally, to go beyond. To go beyond what? To go beyond material nature. To seek a situation beyond the situations offered by the platform of goodness, passion, and ignorance in the material world. So anyone whose aim is to become free from clutches of material nature, who has taken a vow to not to try to enjoy in this world, that person is called, by Prabhupada, transcendentalist. In the pious category, those who are not transcendentalists are called karmis. We are accustomed to calling anyone who's not a devotee as karmi, but that's actually very generous. Technically speaking, if they do not follow the injunction of the Vedas, they are not karmis. Karmi means one who performs his duty according to the injunction of the Vedas, and therefore at least he's being elevated materially, say going to the higher planets. That's what the meaning of karmi is. He follows the injunctions of the Vedas. When people are performing fruitive activities whimsically, just according to sense gratification, they're called vikarmis. They go down to hellish existence. Or here they're mentioned as impious, a non-devotee, or demons. As demons. They're against the authority of the Lord completely. Those who follow the Vedas, they at least recognize this this authority that is over me and whose injunctions I have to follow. I have to recognize the control of higher powers. I have to limit my sense gratification and so on. So they're at least considered to be pious. And gradually, they'll become reformed. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that they may worship many gods, or they may perform sacrifices for fruitive activities, but in all the Vedic rituals, at least you have to worship Vishnu. That's part of the system. So he says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, so therefore there's a tinge of bhakti inserted in that. So for their piety, they get to do little bhakti, and that remains their credit, so that eventually they can become more advanced. So that's the Vedic system. When they do come more advanced, they can become transcendentalists. Then they understand there is no destination in the material world that is worth the effort. From the highest planet down to the lowest, they're all places of misery. No matter how much money I get, no matter how high I'm elevated, no matter what enjoyments are given to me, the material world is dukalayam ashashvatam. It is temporary and misery. I don't want to have anything to do with it. That person then becomes a transcendentalist, or tries to anyway. So that's what it means, transcendentalist. So the impersonalists are also accepted in the category of transcendentalists. They are also trying to become free from material nature. Both the personalists and the impersonalists at least have this much in common. They accept that we are not this body. They understand that one has to become free from the identification of the self with the material body, and therefore that one has to become free from the spirit of enjoying in the material world. This is a transcendentalist. But here, this discussion about the two kinds of transcendentalists here, or even Paramahamsas, the highest achievers among the transcendentalists. There's two kinds, Brahmanadis, Brahmanandis, and Premanandis, those who relish the bliss of Brahman and those who relish the bliss of Prema, Krishna Prema. So the Brahmanadis are impersonalists. Also, we should know there's two kinds of impersonalists. Prabhupada sometimes has made this distinction between Brahmanadis and Mayavadis. Brahmanandis are impersonalists, means that they are targeted as their goal on the Brahma Jyoti, the impersonal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the aspect of the Supreme that is most readily apparent to them. As we know, this is the most, how should we say, beginning or rudimentary realization of the Absolute Truth. Absolute Truth is the ultimate source of all energy. So transcendentalists are those who are interested in attaining to that Absolute Truth. So when one first becomes a transcendentalist and starts to try to understand what is the Absolute Truth, he's turning to it because he is revolted by this material world. People become transcendentalists because of disgust, because of bad, horrible, nasty experiences in material life, and the conviction, sometimes quite bitter, that there's no happiness in this material world. Because of that revulsion against material nature, they also get an incomplete idea of transcendence. This revulsion, although it's understandable as a phase in spiritual development, is ultimately not the correct attitude to take. The correct attitude is not to try to renounce the material world nor to enjoy it. These people have become burnt out on enjoyment, and so now they're into renouncing it. And they carry the renouncing temperament to extremes. And because of their revulsion with material nature, all they're able to see is the impersonal feature of God. It works like this. They think, for example, their experience in the material world of just bodies is that it's horrible and nasty. Look at my own material body. What a humiliating position to be in this material body. Here I am, think I'm a creature with some dignity, and every day I'm forced to squat and pass foul substances. My body, if I had to bathe it all the time, and it smells bad. No matter what I do, it grows old. It's putrescence, it's full of disgust, and so on. People like this, if you go to some extreme Mayavadi groups like Tibetan Buddhists, they have pages and pages and pages where you can just sit and meditate on how revolting the material body is. It's quite effective. And of course, in a certain respect, quite true. What's a little distressing is that this should be your meditation. Not how wonderful Krishna is or Krishna's spiritual form is, but how horrible the material world is. Anyway, this kind of literature, which you find in all religious traditions, there's this notion on meditation. You'll see in the medieval world, you see sometimes prints of old Saint Jerome in his study or something, Christian saints, and you notice they always have a skull sitting around. That's what you did. You had to have what was called a memento mori, a reminder of death. You keep a skull around so you can look at it and think, that's me, that's me. This is what this material world is. People used to do this all the time. Nowadays, nobody likes it. They see the karmis who say, oh, don't be morbid, don't think about it, what's wrong with you, you know. But to one who's a transcendentalist, they think this is too horrible. To stand anymore. I can't take it in material existence. So he becomes disgusted with the idea of form. He becomes disgusted with the idea of even individual existence. What does he know of individual existence? People trying to lord it over material nature. People who are so puffed up and full of themselves. And every personal relationship he has been completely horrible. When I was a new devotee, I was out doing some Didi shopping, and I ran into was in the shop of a businessman. He saw I was a devotee, and he said he wanted to tell me his philosophy of life, because he thought that I was the kind of person you could talk to things like that. He said, you want to know my philosophy, kid? I'll tell you my philosophy. People stink. There was such force and conviction. I looked at him, you know, I could see that, you know, I'm sure his partners had cheated him, his wife had divorced him, his children had disowned him. You know, he had had one horrible experience after another. He was so cynical. People stink. And my first thought was, how will I ever explain to this man that God is a person? Because that's his conviction. People stink. That's his experience. People stink. You say Krishna, God is a person. No, I don't want to have anything to do with people. I've had it with people. I've had it with form. Everything is all bad. Activity. Oh, all our activities in the material world are horrible. Now they're just pain and suffering. So what is spiritual existence? It's just nothingness. No people. No activities. No bodies. No body. Nothing. That's release. This is how they, from their intense disgust with material existence, they desire just the opposite of everything they know. And in that way, they have to conceive of the Supreme Lord as impersonal. They become attracted to that impersonal feature. That's the first thing, there's attraction. And then that's all they can know also. By their speculation, their language, their mentality is material. And when they try to use their material conceptions to understand the Supreme, all they understand is that our language doesn't work anymore. And there's a breakdown of our concepts. I can't export into transcendence the language of this material world. And so the best description of transcendence is not this, not that, not this, not that, not this, not that, so on. These people are called impersonalists. Almost everybody who begins to think about transcendence and tries to understand the Supreme becomes, to some degree or another, an impersonalist. You know, it happens sometimes, a lot of kids around the 11th grade or so, they start to understand God or infinite. You think, oh, everything here is finite, so God is infinite, and finite means that it's limited and has a form, so therefore God being infinite or transcendent is being infinite, there obviously can't be a limitation of form, and so, you know, what are all these people imagining that God is a person? And you can, then you think that you're smarter than everybody else because you figured this all out, and then you pick up a paperback book, you know, the Upanishads or something, or Aldous Huxley, The Perennial Philosophy, and you discover, wow, everybody's figured it out too. This is the truth because, look, it's all over the world. This is another thing about this impersonalism, is that it's the first stage for a transcendentalist, in every religious tradition, people become impersonalists. This negative idea of the supreme, you find everywhere. That's why the people who started really advocating it in the West in a big way, like Aldous Huxley, wrote a book, I think in the 30s, called The Perennial Philosophy, where he takes, you know, teachings of mystics in the East and teachings of mystics of the West and shows that the same Mayavadi philosophy is there, so therefore it must be the truth, because everybody discovers the same thing independently. Of course, everybody independently has discovered sexual intercourse. That doesn't make it the truth, but this is how they come to it. Sense gratification is universal. So is this. It doesn't mean that it's the highest truth. But at any rate, for this reason, people come to this impersonal conception of the Supreme. They become fixated on that's all they may be able to know. Actually, Prabhupada says that it is all right to be an impersonalist if you have not heard about Krishna. But once you hear about Krishna, then you should give it up. Because I was myself very much absorbed in personal philosophy before I became a devotee. I was studying it in graduate school. I was reading Shankaracharya. I mean, I was really into it. And when I first met devotees, I thought that they were impersonalists too. Not only impersonalists, but Mayavadis. I thought they were too. Because I simply didn't know that any other position was possible. I didn't know that any other position was possible. Now, of course, the way impersonalism came to me, one had this realization of kind of the transcendence as impersonal, speculative understanding at least. I don't know how much realization was there. But then there's different things you can do. Now, the position we particularly call Mayavadi is a subcategory of impersonalists. I mean, sometimes in context they'll be used as synonyms, Mayavadi and impersonalist. But here we have this distinction that Prabhupada has given between Brahmanadis and Mayavadis. This is the difference. A Brahmanandi is one who is targeted on the impersonal Brahman but does not deny the transcendental features of Krishna. Whereas the Mayavad philosophy is a systematic, speculative working out of impersonal realization with the conclusion that Krishna's form is Maya. That's that Mayavadi. Vada, the word Vada means teaching or doctrine. Mayavada, the doctrine that Krishna is Maya. Or that everything is Maya. Mayavada. Their philosophy is that when you speak of God, the person, Krishna, Vishnu, his name, form, qualities, and relationships are material. They also deny that the material energy or the material world emanates from transcendence. In other words, they reject the philosophy given by Vyasadeva of emanation or parinamavada, and substitute for this notion of illusion, that it's an illusion, illusory superimposition. So they say, therefore, that ultimately Krishna, his name, form, qualities are material, they're illusion. They don't really exist. Now, you can be an impersonalist and not have this conclusion. You can be somebody who is targeted or attracted to the impersonal Brahman and not have any theories about Krishna, or actually understand that Krishna is there too, but somehow or other your interest is more on the impersonal Brahman. That's maybe just where your stage of development is. People in that position are like the four Kumaras, or Sukadeva Goswami. They were Brahman realized, they were absorbed in impersonal Brahman, but somehow or other they had some contact with Krishna or Krishna's devotees, and they became attracted, although they weren't attracted to anything material, and they became devotees of Krishna. They did not have any philosophy that they were convinced of, that Krishna was Maya. That's one category of Brahmanandis, different from, but the Mayavadis is this particular theory of Shankaracharya that says that the Lord is a product of ignorance and not has no transcendental existence. He's also illusory, as much as the world that's supposed to emanate from him. That's Mayavadi. Those are the ones that are the big offenders, the worst offenders against Krishna. So, of course, if one doesn't know about Krishna, for example, I as mentioned earlier, when I first started coming to the temple, I thought the devotees were Mayavadis because I just didn't think there was any other position possible. The notion that God could have a transcendental and personal existence had just never occurred to me. It hadn't occurred to anybody. I'd taken courses in Hinduism. Somebody purported to explain Ramanuja and Madhvacharya's philosophy. None of them ever said that, even if that's what Ramanuja was saying, because they were all impersonalists and they all gave it that little twist. And then one day after I was coming to the temple, I was just sitting at the Sunday feast, and a devotee was talking to a woman devotee was talking to some guy next to me, and she said, "Oh no, you don't understand. Krishna's beyond that light. That light emanates from the transcendental body of Krishna." And like this, just like somebody set a bomb off, you know, this whole Mayavadi metaphysical structure in my head just went. There was such a revelation, and it just blew the whole thing up. Almost like I didn't have a choice; it just blew up. So sometimes you can be a Mayavadi just because you don't know any better. But when you actually understand who Krishna is, then you have to give it up. So those are these two groups: the Brahmanadis and the Premanadis. Premanadis are those who are focused on the transcendental form of Krishna. This is the higher position in transcendence. And he says, really, the Paramahamsa, in the true sense of the term, because here you see Vishwanath Chakravarti says there's two kinds of Paramahamsas, but we see that Queen Kunti and Jiva Goswami, they really, like to say, really, when you come down to it, the real Paramahamsa is the devotee. Because this is the highest position in transcendence, where again it is admitted that the Lord has name, form, qualities, and pastimes. This disgust at the material world is the other side of attraction. The devotees do not reject the material world the way that the impersonalists do. The Mayavadis go so far in their rejection to deny that it exists. I can't remember. Jagan Nitya. Brahma Satyam Jagan Nitya. Brahman alone is real, and the material world is false. The material world is false. They deny the connection between the absolute truth and the material world, just as the materialists do. They also deny the connection. They don't see the connection with Krishna. They want to enjoy independently of Krishna. And in the Mayavadi stage, that independence is still there. You still separate the Lord from his energies by another method. The one when you try to enjoy the energies, and the other when you try to renounce them completely. So the devotee's position is to see everything belongs to Krishna. It's not mine to enjoy, neither is it mine to reject, but it is to be used in the service of Krishna. So this is the position of the devotee. And that devotee can also understand the limitation of the speculative process, which starts with the notion that name, form, qualities, activities are by their nature material. That's what they think. All name is material name, all form material form. And so if God is spiritual, he has no name, no form, and so on. The notion that he could have spiritual name, spiritual form, that's beyond their conception, because they're so absorbed in the material world. In the highest stage, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental name, transcendental form, transcendental activities, and transcendental relationships. All these things they have denied. There can be individuality that's not like the individuality of the material world. There can be personal existence that's not with all the horrors of the personal existence of the material world. These things they don't know about yet. So when one comes to the highest progressive stage, he becomes Paramahamsa. He can accept here, as it says here of Krishna, Akila Satta Murtaye, unto his form of complete transcendental goodness. So this is the position of Krishna. So it says he grants everybody their specific destinations. Prabhupada quotes this, yayatam mam prapadyante, as they surrender to me, I'll reciprocate with them. It's according, he treats everyone equally. As you approach me, I will reciprocate with you. It's the same. It depends on the devotee's approach. He doesn't favor some, or a devotee or non-devotee's approach, but whatever you come. But he acts in such a way for the good of everybody. So he grants them the specific destination. To those who want to be absorbed in the Brahma Jyoti, he absorbs them. Those that want to relish a spiritual life with him, he also grants that according to their particular rasa and so on. Those who are pious, he also grants them the destinations of their pious activities. All this is being done by Krishna for all different categories and classes of people. That's the statement here of Shukadeva Goswami. So any questions? Comments? Yes. Yeah. That's right.
Why did he introduce this Mayavadi philosophy?
By the order of Krishna.
Because Shankaracharya is the incarnation of Russian.
Yeah.
Then he, after the time of death, he has to realize that Hari Govindam, Hari Govindam, Govindam, Govindam. Why he introduce this Mayavadi philosophy. Though he is a Vaishnava, the beginning he can do.
Because he was ordered to do so by Krishna. That's just in Padma Purana. He say Shiva explains to Parvati that in the Kali Yuga I shall come as a Brahmana and I shall teach this Mayavada philosophy, which is impious, Asat Shastram. It is covered Buddhism. It is covered Buddhism. Because in this way I will increase the progress of Kali Yuga. Because by persuading people that the absolute truth is impersonal, they'll become more attracted to the material world. So that was his stated mission there also. But he also had other things that he was doing. The way Prabhupada explains it is that there was a plan of Krishna to restore complete Vedic culture. That everything began to go wrong in the Kali Yuga when so much animal slaughter was taking place under the direction of Brahmanas on the authority of the Vedas. The animal slaughter was everywhere in India, and they said it was Vedic sacrifice. You know, thousands and thousands of goats and whatever. And people were just eating the remnants of those sacrifices. And so meat eating was gone very, very big way. So the Lord came as Buddha with the notion of stopping the animal slaughter. So therefore, because this animal slaughter was going on the theory that is sanctioned in the Vedas, therefore he denied the authority of the Vedas. And when Buddhism became successful in India, the Vedas were ignored and the Brahminical class was finished. But there was no more meat eating. So then the next step was the appearance of Shankar Acharya. Padma Purana says, this is very interesting for me to find this out, Padma Purana says that it is a covered Buddhism, this Mayavad philosophy. You can say closet Buddhism, secret Buddhism. It's Buddhist philosophy, but it's presented in Vedic guise. Buddhist philosophy is shunya, shunyatva, voidism. So their idea is that everything is void. Shankara says, no, it's not void, it's Brahman. But no name, no form, no quality, no activities. How does that differ from nothing at all? It's the same. So it's very, very close. And anyway, it was interesting to discover now that more and more scholars who study these things are beginning to agree that actually Shankaracharya's philosophy owes a great deal to the writings of the Madhyamika Buddhist Nagarjuna. People are tracking down exactly, you know, how he took it and just rearranged it a little bit to make it look Vedic. Why? Because those people who are already following Buddhists, now he could bring them back into accepting the authority of the Vedas. So that's what he did. Because of Shankaracharya's preachings, the Buddhists had to quit India, and he restored the Brahmanas. He set up the smarter system that's in India. That's Shankaracharya's system. He set it up. So now you had a kind of partial Vedic restoration, but now it was this Mayavad philosophy and this smarter system. So next step is we see the Vaishnava Acharyas come and present the original and true teachings of the Veda, which is that the absolute truth is a person, and which also, by the way, has a great, you know, at last some scholars are beginning to say, hey, you know, maybe these guys are right. That's what the Vedanta Sutra really does say.